I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Cleaver's Massive Storytelling Podcast, a podcast where an independent publishing company explores the world of self-publishing, independent art, and the future of storytelling. My name is Luke Condor with Kate, and I'm joined by my regular co-host, Mr.
Daniel Wilcox. Hello.
How's it going, Daniel Wilcox? Oh, hello.
Doing all right, thank you. How are you?
Not too bad. I've got my can of iron brew, although I've only got one not swallow left.
Oh, everyone hates that last swallow.
Yeah, it's mostly spit.
It's just flat and spitty and salivary. Yeah. I don't actually drink iron brew.
You are, so you don't drink iron brew?
I don't drink iron brew.
It's the best drink. Behind like Coca-Cola, I think.
Milk.
Milk's good.
Milk is glorious.
Beer. I've had a recent thing about wheat beer.
Wheat beer or wheat?
Wheat beer, yeah. Okay. Have you ever tried Blue Moon?
I haven't.
No, it's good, man. That or like a Desperado or something like that. It's super refreshing.
How does it vary to regular beer, hop beer?
I just know that there's one beer, Blue Moon, has a very... It just seems to really hit the spot. I can't describe it any better than that because it still just tastes like beer, but it just tastes very good. Because I'm not a big fan of like the ales. Everyone seems to be going for ales these days.
No, people are going ale mad.
They have, yeah. And I always drink and think, you know what? I would have been better with Desperado.
Ale and gin.
You like gin or you don't like gin?
Oh, no. Everyone's just gone for ale and gin.
Yeah, it's a weird cocktail.
Well, I call it Gale.
Yeah.
No, just give me a cider. Give me a honey Jack Daniels and I'll have a good night.
Yeah. Just stay away with that like black Sambuca. I can't. Oh. Can't smell it anymore.
Why? What was your experience of black Sambuca that pushed you over the edge?
The last time I had black Sambuca was at Kat's brother's wedding. This was one of the earlier times. Like I'd met their family obviously many times, but this was like Kat's extended family were there, like you know, aunties and uncles and grandparents and stuff. And I had some black Sambuca and fell asleep on the like sofa next to the dance floor.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's one way to do it.
So that's their impression of me.
Have you, had pink Sambuca?
No, I don't think so.
Actually, not too bad. Not that we condone drinking in any way, shape, or form.
I think drinking's great as long as you do it responsibly. I don't drink too much, actually. I only drink like through two drinks a week at the most, I imagine.
Okay. I'm off to a wedding this weekend where I found out only about a week ago that it's long time family friend, and I've only just found out that the mother is incredibly against drinking and has already ordered the bar people to cut people off the minute they start getting tipsy. So I've considered that a bit of a challenge, and I'm gonna see what happens, because
you're gonna take some pre-drinks, some Frosty Jacks.
I might take some prinks, stick them inside my jacket, little hip flask, maybe one of those straws that goes up the sleeve.
Yeah.
What? I've never seen a straw go up the sleeve.
Well, how would that work? I guess you could put lean your chin on your hand.
And suckle on your palm. Yeah. Dan, what are you doing? Nothing.
Thinking. Just pondering life.
Did you ever do that in school where you used to feed your headphone up your arm and then just lean on it while you're in class?
No, but back when I was in school, 15 years ago or something, we didn't really have headphones.
Fair enough. Yeah, okay. I forget how young I am.
I thought there were headphones around, but I seem to remember they were more of the spongy over-ear variety. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
They weren't so much in it. I think it was when Apple started to, iPod started to get big, that people had the in-ears.
Yeah, yeah, I remember those ones you had to really squeeze in your ear.
Yeah,
yeah.
Pop them in.
Oh,
okay, so besides earphones and drinking, how is the writing going?
Yeah, it's going glorious. I've had a big writing day today. Took some time off work. Managed to smack out a good 6,000 words, which has been nice. Yeah, that was a target I'd set for myself, because what I was just saying to you a minute ago before we went live, that it's been a little while since I've sort of hit any big word counts. I've been going for a bit of trudging through the mud a bit, trying to get back into a story that I had to leave after I got a good chunk of the way into it and come back to it. And because of that pause, it's taken a lot longer to get back into the groove of the story than I would have liked. But I'm on a roll now. I'm starting to remember the characters, remembering where they were going and making some headway. So I've got another few days off this week. I'm going to see if I can smash a few more counts out of the park, hit up some cafes and crack on with a story.
What cafe do you go to when you go do some writing?
Go through to a bit of a mix. I found a new place actually on the university campus last week or so. We were having a bit of a wander with some people, and it's actually in one of the old accommodations I used to live when I was at university, and it used to be a bar, and we just happened to go up there just to see what it was like sort of, I don't know, 8 years on. And they've converted the entire thing into this really smart study space. I'll have to send you a few pictures, but it's got Wi-Fi, it's got really comfy seats, it's got a little booth, it's got a table tennis table, it's got a pool table. And it's just, I imagine it's not really just for anyone to walk into, but
right, okay.
It's very cozy.
Members club.
Bit of a members club with no doorman. And then other than that, I like sitting in our Waterstones and going into the top of the cafe there, into the Cafe W.
I've been to that cafe before, many years ago.
Yeah?
When I was 18, so nearly,
two decades ago.
2 decades ago. That's insane. I can't imagine there are cafes now. I don't have Wi-Fi. That sounds insane to me.
Do you know what? It was surprising. I went last week or so, and I actually went to about 3 different cafes on a lunch break, and none of them had Wi-Fi. I don't know if they were just down or if there was a glitch in the matrix, but
that's bad business practice. I think Wi-Fi is how you get people in. Lure them with free Wi-Fi, and then they buy a coffee or. In fact, there's one cafe in Manchester that does it. So instead of paying for your drink, you pay for your time there, and you get free drinks and free food and whatever, like toast and biscuits and muffins and stuff. So it's all free or whatever you want.
What?
But you pay for your time. So it's like £2.60 an hour or something like that.
How is that a good business model?
Well, I think in some places, like they have someone buys like a, it's what I do. I buy like a filter coffee. It's the cheapest coffee you can get. It's like 99 pence, 49 pence if you take your own cup. And then we just, rinse the Wi-Fi. Torrenting and just using their plug sockets, getting the juice from the electrics.
That's a dangerous finding somewhere that has a plug socket, that has an available seat near the plug socket if you're going for the nomad lifestyle. That's a tricky part.
Yeah.
How's your writing?
Well, we're mainly doing short story work, like catching up on stuff for the other stories, and also working on Keith. About half an hour into it now. Got a few parts cast, interestingly. Got a few... So some of the live action stuff, I don't really know how to do it or how it's going to work. So I've been talking to an actual director friend who does, you know, more like commercial work and stuff, but he travels the world doing this kind of stuff. I've asked him to maybe help out with those bits, and he's really interested in doing that. So nice. I think it's all going to work out. I made a little snippet and I shared that around privately to some people, and they watched it and they were like, yeah, I think it's going to work. Because this film is so specific in the way it functions, it's not like a normal film. There's always the question of, is it going to, even though I made a short film version of it, this is slightly different again. And there's always a question of, theoretically it could work, but practically you never know until you put it down on paper, if you know what I mean, and had a look at it. But I made like a little 3-minute snippet and it looks like it's going to work. So
nice.
That's like, where I'm at.
It's like any big project, isn't it? You just chip away, chip away, chip away. And then it's only once the overall piece is all together that you can actually look at what works, what are the fast bits, the slow bits, and actually make those changes that make it all smooth.
Yeah. I think a lot of people think that writing especially is like you start at the chapter one and it's perfect all the way through to the end. But it's a lot more like painting. Like, you know, you sketch out some loose shapes and designs and then you put some watercolors over there or like a few blank sort of filler color sort of thing. And then you try something there, you smudge that a bit. Do you know what I mean? You constantly sort of experimenting as you go until you build towards the final painting.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I've run about 4 edits now on the last book that I finished that it hasn't been released yet, but each time I found something, each time I finished it and thought, you know what, it's done. And then when I've gone back to look at it again, there's been something else where as I'm going through, I've gone, huh, that doesn't quite make sense. Or, oh, that could change. Or I could add bits here and tweak bits there. And it's good to step back, see that bigger picture and understand that your first draft isn't the final draft.
Yeah. Plus, like, what's that saying? These projects are never finished. They're just abandoned. You get to the point where you can't. You need to stop. You need to move on to the next thing.
Diminishing returns. You don't get anything more out of it.
Yeah, yeah. So, dude, big whoop.
Big whoop. Okay. My big whoop was a bit of a surprise this week because it's not writing related. It's not book related. I was going to do my little experiment with Huel, but I'll save that for another time. Is actually that I'm now a father of 14. So I basically had a fish and then, well, I bought 3 fish a couple of years back. Pardon?
You said you had a fish, just wondering how painful that was.
It slipped right out. I had 3 fish a couple of years ago. 2 of them died. I had one lonely by itself for a while. My granddad's fish decided to have babies, so he gave me, well, I basically asked for 2 fish, and he gave me 5 teeny tiny baby goldfish, which are now all swimming happily in my tank, and they're all very, very healthy and fine. And then as I was cleaning my tank out 2 days ago, got a new filter, very exciting, I basically found what I thought was a piece of poop, and it turned out to have 2 eyes, and it was swimming around the tank. And then the more I explored, I realized I've got 8.
That's what I was saying about me.
I've now got 8 little baby fish just swimming around my tank, and at closer inspection, 2 more of my fish are pregnant. So
how can you tell? They're just bloated around the middle.
Yeah, to be fair, one of them a couple of weeks ago I did say looked very pregnant, and yeah, you can tell they do bloat and swell like a pregnant belly. And yeah, 2 of them are definitely pregnant. I'm looking at them now. Yeah, I've now got 14 fish with a possible another gazillion on the way in a tank that I was told should only house 2 fish, which has had 6 living happily for about 6 months.
Yeah, you've got to start worrying when there's so many of them they start to plan a revolt.
I'm imagining that net scene in Finding Nemo where they're all trying to swim down, but they're just smashing the glass.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. Have you always had fish?
I haven't, but I've always been a fan of fish. And when I moved and went to university, that was one of the first things I got, was actually a fish tank with a couple of fish, and they did all right. But yeah, I just always wanted fish because they're easy to keep, and there's something mesmerizing about watching them. I could literally watch them for hours.
Interesting. So I've never had fish, and I've always kind of, because I've always grown up with dogs and cats, fish always seem like the...
Oh, don't put them in the fish tank.
No, they don't like it. They just don't need to get out. And yeah. But I don't know. I've never really... I can imagine liking having a fish if I did have one, but I would never have the impetus to get one, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
If he's going to let me go out and get one, unless I find one.
No. Well, this is it. I wasn't going to get any more fish. And then my granddad was like, my fish has had lots of fish. Do you want any before I flush them down the toilet? So I was like, hell yeah. And now I've got far too many.
Yeah.
It's fine. Cool. They're happy. And if they're not, then they're fish.
Yeah.
I don't know what more to say to that. What's your big whoop?
My big whoop is Resident Evil 7. Have you played it? Have you played any sort of Resi games or anything?
Is that, when did that one come out?
Last year, I think. Maybe.
I think I played that one on VR.
What? I don't know how you managed that. Like,
oh, it's all right.
So I can watch like the scariest horror films and read the scariest horror books, but games, just whatever it is, it's because I think it's because you've got agency in the sort of the character's demise, but it just freaked me out, and I just start walking super slow, and like I have to put my face right on the TV, turn the brightness up, so just so nothing could jump out at me, and obviously that makes it worse. It's not any better if you just sort of go gung ho a bit and just keep pushing forward, but I had to take so much time to go around these corners, and then when something does jump out, it just freaks me out. Mm-hmm. But yeah, as a VR, I don't even think that's even playable. Like, even.
No, I had a friend literally hand me the VR headset. It was his game, and I came over to hang out, and he handed me the headset, and I put it on, and he loaded it from a particular point. He was like, have a go at this. And in true game fashion, I went into a room, and it was filled with ammo and medicine. So I was like, holy shit, that means that something big's going to happen. And as I came out of the room, and some crazy bitch just appeared and just grabbed my VR arm and started eating it. And I was like, holy crap.
So with a chainsaw. Oh, no, I don't know what you mean. That's fairly near the start. I've done that.
It was intense. I don't.
So intense, yeah.
And the thing is, I don't know about you. Do you ever play horror games on consoles in the daytime?
Well, I don't really play horror games on consoles too much. That's the thing. But when I have, I actually find it less scary at night, because you remember, like the sun, or there's light on the screen, and you can't quite see in the little corners on the screen. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Because there's no glare, you can see as much as you can. But yeah, that game especially, like, you can only see like what's just in front of your face. And why? You know, you're running away from something. Why are you running so slowly?
Like, oh, I don't know.
There's a guy
one
like,
speed. With one speed 10
behind you. Yeah, it's insane. But yeah, that's a big word. I'm just I haven't played many horror games.
I remember playing Dead Space 2. I think I borrowed it off of a friend who told me how scary it was. And in true fashion, I waited until 10:30 at night, sat about half a meter away from the TV, full volume, everything. And literally, I think I played about 20 minutes of the game and then turned it off because I shat my pants.
Those games, they always at the start say, for the full immersion, make sure you're wearing headphones, turn the sound up, and they have like the gamma thing, so you can't see this black square. You're like, no, thank you. I'll do the exact opposite of that.
I want to
all the way up.
I want to be scared, but I don't want to be paralyzed.
There is a part of me that thinks I actually quite like that I'm still scared of them. Because like with films, when I grew up watching horror films, the first time you watch a few horror films, they really freak you out. And then you become like a bit like immune to them. And like nowadays, I still love watching horror films, but it's very rare that something really sort of gives me that same thrill. Whereas the games still do it. Mm. So I kind of don't want to lose that to some extent.
Don't want to get desensitized.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, all fun.
So today then, today, this is the very first episode of the Massive Storytelling Podcast.
Woohoo!
Same podcast as you've always known, but just under a new banner with some new jingles and jangles and all those little bits in between. But it is going to be the last one for a little while. We've not put the episode of this out for a little while, just because we both are super busy. I'm making a feature film. Never done that before. Dan, you're doing like a crazy trilogy of books, which are set to like get to number one on the Amazon store or something like that. So at the minute, we're just kind of like completely under it. And we thought, let's just, because this show, especially because we want to make this show, we want to do like the Patreon stuff. We want to do all like the extra bits and behind the scenes bits. And we can't really do that at the minute. We can't really dedicate the time. So we feel like we kind of shortchanging people.
Yeah, it's a bit of a shame. But at the end of the day, that we started this podcast because we wanted to talk to cool people. We wanted to give the audience an insight into other people's processes and what they're doing. And we still want to do all of that. But at the minute, it's just finding the time to do so. And we want to, like you say, deliver the best experience we can possible. And until able to do that, then we'll freeze for a little while. But I don't see it being forever. I'm more than excited to get back into this once things are sort of quietened down a bit and we can get back in and give it our all. Like you say, there's a lot that we want to do here, and it's just making sure that we can actually give the best experience we can.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So today, for this episode, we're going to be talking to a guy. I was watching, I'm a big fan of the Rebel Without a Crew book, and I came across they were doing a TV show based on the same idea. So if you didn't know, Robert Rodriguez, really famous director, he's done El Mariachi, he made for $7,000. Like this is about 25 years ago now or something. But it's a big, really inspiring story in this book. And he decided to make a TV show about it. I've been watching the TV show and I found this guy who is just like a really interesting guy. He's got a lot of cool things to say. And we got him on the show. This was actually recorded this interview. How long ago now, Dan?
Three weeks? About 6 weeks.
Wow, 6 weeks. Jesus Christ. So we got this guy.
Sorry, Alejandro.
He was an absolute star. We didn't just talk about filmmaking, but we talked about deciding if you should go out and make films or if you should go out and be a creator of some sort. So I think there's a lot here for people to dig into.
Quite broad ranging, very, very fun. Very, very much enjoyed this interview.
So enjoy the episode, and it won't be too long. We'll be back before you know it, annoying you.
See you soon.
Alejandro Montoya Marin is a rebel. He's a rebel without a crew. He was born in Texas and raised in Mexico. Alejandro is a director of short films, feature films, music videos, and you can currently be seeing him on El Rey Network's Rebel Without a Crew, the TV show, where you can watch him and four other filmmakers follow in the steps of legendary filmmaker Robert Rodriguez, where they have to write and direct a feature-length film for $7,000. So welcome to the show, Alejandro. We are
welcome.
We love that you're here. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
So what have you been geeking out on recently, dude? What have you been watching or listening to?
Oh, man, so many things. I am going to be seeing, I'm a really aficionado for music. I love music, whether it's in Spanish or Italian or English. I just love music. And right now, what I'm prepping for is on Monday, we're going to go see a band named Big Thief. I don't know if you guys heard of them. They're fantastic. And a week after that, we're going to go see Beach House.
I've heard of Beach House. I haven't heard them, but I'm sure I've heard of them. Yeah.
But like movie-wise, I've been watching this Netflix documentary called Wild Wild Country.
Yeah.
Which is about a cult that started in I want to say Portland. It's pretty fantastic. I'm like an episode, I'm one episode away from finishing it. And that's really cool because like we were watching it and I was, if this were a movie, we will all be watching the movie going, oh, this is so exaggerated.
Yeah.
Happened, and it's scary that happened. That's really good. And what else have I been watching? That's pretty much it. I'm really excited about the Avengers movie. That looks pretty cool.
Oh my god, it was it's 2 weeks time or something. It's around the corner. Yeah
It looks fantastic. It feels like they wrote this map at the beginning of this whole universe. And they've all right, got that. All right, here we go. This is what we've been working for, and I applaud them. I'm a DC guy, but I applaud them because it looks so much fun.
Yeah, if you
it's so incredible how big they've managed to make it, to go from what felt big in the first Avengers film to kind of constantly stepping up. And I do kind of wonder where their limit's going to be, but.
Oh, man. No, it looks fantastic. So I'm pretty excited about that. Mm. Other than that, just, you know, same old. I'm writing another movie, so that's basically taking the majority of my time.
Yeah. And the day job, of course, for the answering phone calls and stuff. Yeah.
Doing podcasts with people in the UK. You know, pretending like I'm working. And shit.
If this isn't a testament to multitasking, I don't know what is.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right. I'm also making a coffee as we. No, I'm joking.
Balloon animals behind the camera. Well. Yeah. So, Alejandro, take us back to you as a little boy. What sort of got you hooked on films in the first place? What made you want to become a director?
Honestly, it's like I remember seeing my first movie when I was a kid. It was an animation from Spain that I just like fell in love with. And the experience of being in the theater and seeing everything like really big and the sound and the popcorn and all that, just like I just immediately became fixated with film. And it's surprising because I was like three. So my mom has always been blown away that I remember this. Yeah. But ever since I was a kid, I don't know, man, like my parents have always watched movies, but like no one in my family is as fixated with the art, you know what I mean? Like I have cousins that are like cinephiles, but no one actually turned it into a career. And I did a play when I was a kid, and it was the it was Braveheart. We did Braveheart.
Cool.
But in Mexico. We didn't have kilts, obviously, so I just took a bunch of my aunt's skirts and like and we just did Braveheart in front of the school. And from there, I started doing like short films. And I didn't know that this was a career. I just watched movies and I loved it. Until one of my friends was like, you should be a director. And I was like, oh, shit, you can do that. Like, I just felt like that wasn't something that was obtainable.
Yeah.
And people like Robert Rodriguez and Kevin Smith and Quentin Tarantino were the ones in the independent realm. Obviously, you have your Kubricks, your Spielbergs, your Scorseses, you know, that's different. But then this surge of independent filmmakers came up, and that just gave, like, everyone hope. Like, holy shit, I can possibly do this.
Yeah.
So by doing so, we were in Mexico. So, like, my whole mentality was you have to maintain and you have to learn English perfectly because you're going to be writing for an English market.
Yeah.
So the whole time I was me practicing with, well, what's relevant in pop culture? What's funny for English speaking audiences? Because at one point I was like, I'm going to study this one day. I will be doing film one day. And
how old were you at that point?
Oof, like 13, 14. Yeah. So I studied marketing in Mexico, and then that would just help me to help promote my projects, whether it be social media wise or making projects that I feel are marketable. Like I understand money is not, I'm not reinventing the wheel with it. It's not, it's just fun. It's just a fun movie. It's like something that I would like to see. So how can we make it marketable? Oh, let's grab the name that every language knows, Monday. Boom, there's something. And then from there, how can we start making something that's marketable, but at the same time, sort of original that has its own voice.
Yeah.
And then from there, I went to study film in Vancouver in Canada because, you know, Kevin Smith is one of my favorite filmmakers. And I didn't want to go to LA, one, because I couldn't afford it. I just couldn't afford it. And two, I just thought it was like too much or too, like, it's been done before. So I was like, you know what? I want to go to Canada. Like, I started doing research on Canada, and I love that Canada is super diverse. Yeah. It's incredibly diverse. Like, a lot of people don't give Canada that much credit for it, but like 30% of the population is Asian. And I thought that was badass.
Wow.
Like, I was like, I want to know more. So I went. And then after graduating, we came to Albuquerque because of the sudden surge of a film that the state has thanks to Breaking Bad and The Avengers and a bunch of other movies that I've shot here. So we came here, and I've been here for 9 years.
Wow. So were there any sort of specific films as you were a kid? For me, it was like Masters of the Universe that I used in Gremlins 2. I used to watch them over and over and over again until I wore out the tapes. Were there any films like that where you were like fixated on? Yeah.
Super cliche, though. Like, they're super cliche. Like, Star Wars is awesome. Yeah. Remember, you guys are my age, right? I'm 36.
I'm 30.
I'm 27.
Dan's really young.
this is like, well, back when I was younger, like when I was a teenager, I don't know how it was over there, but in Mexico, you liking Star Wars is not cool.
Yeah,
it was a bit cooler here.
Yeah, I think when I don't know if it was ever really cool until the.
Were you in North, weren't you? Were you North as a kid?
North.
What do you mean? I mean,
where did you grow up, Luke? You were Mansfield?
In the Midlands,
Yeah, so that's North. Like, I grew up in the South, and I know there's definitely a divide there. I wouldn't say Star Wars was cool, but I'd say that it probably wasn't as bad as I've seen the further north I've come.
Oh, okay. Well, so you're saying the further north in England you get, the more...
You're just losers.
As you're driving up there, you're like, yeah, Star Wars is a little bit cooler now.
Yeah. To Star Wars. So, is there any others?
Oh, so many, man. Star Wars. I was a huge later career Kubrick fan.
Mm.
I don't know why. Like, obviously, Shining, Clockwork Orange, Barry Lyndon. I can't get through it.
Yeah, I've never tried. To be honest, I need to watch that.
But Eyes Wide Shut, I defend it every time I can. I just tell them it's a great movie. Like, obviously, Spielberg. Out of all the Spielberg movies, I want to say Indiana Jones, obviously. Those are great. And, Jesus, Jaws. I love Jaws. That's just so many, man. Godfather. The Godfather. I love I have a bunch of movies.
Yeah.
Jesus. Sopranos. The Sopranos is like one of the best things I've ever seen ever. I love it. The Office, both British and American, I love. I'm a big fan of Gervais. I love Shawshank, Pulp Fiction, 500 Days of Summer, Amores Perros, Cinema Paradiso. I love like Blade Runner. Just so many genres. I respect and love the art of film so much.
Yeah.
That must obviously help with informing how you are as a filmmaker to have quite a wide range of respect for a load of different genres. How is it that you find, what would you kind of define as your niche, your genre, and how has the stuff that you've watched inform what you do now?
Obviously, as you get older or as you start working more in film, you know, you start off with like, oh, that's too stupid. Oh, that's that. But even movies that are like maybe are not trying to take themselves too seriously, as you get older, you start appreciating like, wow, look at the choreography in this. Oh, look at the editing in this. I think Kevin Smith said it like 10 years ago where he was like, look, man, after you get a certain age, you learn to appreciate all films. Because there's a lot of hard work that goes into them. Like for filmmakers or a director, you don't just do a movie in a month and then you're gone. It consumes your life for a year. So I respect film so much because, I don't know, I think it's one of the sources that inspire a lot of people. Maybe people get inspired by reading or by doing art, but film speaks to so many different cultures around the world that it's, I don't know, man. I think it's essential in our way of life. I mean, it's something that we connect. I mean, look at this. Look where you guys are from. Look where I'm at. And we're talking about film. It's just a part of our lives. I didn't consider myself a filmmaker until 2 years ago because you have people that are just brilliant at it. That you're, in my opinion, I was intimidated to be like, how can I even call myself a colleague of them?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. Like, till this date, I like, it, because of the show, like, Robert was, like, our mentor. I've never called anyone a mentor, ever. And even when I asked him, I said, can I? Like, I still ask permission. You know, yeah. Like when you're young and you want to kiss a girl, you're like, can I kiss you? And you look like a different like that, man. So I don't know, man. I think it was one of the first realms of the art. That's why they call it the seventh art, that I just gravitated, and I knew how to express myself and what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Through film.
Yeah.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 6 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $2.99 each. Then get flavorful large avocados for 99 cents each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So you say you're writing a new film at the minute. When you first got into making stuff, you said you're making short films. Were you writing films this whole time? Were you writing prose or anything, like, you know, books or anything as well? Or were you just focusing on screenplays and films and that kind of thing?
Yeah, I wanted to do short films just because it's when you have the day job, you have to, if you don't stay creative, you're just walking backwards. And it's kind of, I can't sit still. For someone who's overweight, I have no idea. I can't sit still, man. So I tried to make several projects until one of them is like, okay, it's ready to go. Then I gravitate towards that. But I try to make projects that just I would love to watch, you know? So I started doing short films because they're not that expensive. We can shoot them in a weekend and edit them and then go see what happens. And plus, if you really want to do film, you have to start testing how good are you? Where can you move around? What's another genre that you haven't done so you can exercise the creativity of just telling a story? So that's why I love music videos also. So I try to do as much stuff like music videos, commercials, short film, stuff like that.
Yeah. So So before we go into the big one that we wanted to talk about, the TV show, was there any short films that you were like particularly proud of that you think people should go out and check out?
I think my favorite short film is not even the Monday short film. It's the Lo-Fi short film. Yeah. I have it on my YouTube channel if anyone wants to watch it. But it's my favorite because on every project, I try to challenge myself a little bit more. So Warehouse Games is also there. That was my thesis. That was my first script in English. So I was like, I want to see if I can make people laugh. And this is the first time I write in English. Then for Lo-Fi, I wanted to write, it's basically about the negative effects that pop culture has and our expectations on love, but told through a woman. So I wanted to test myself if I could write a female character that sounds convincing and doesn't sound like it's written by an overweight Mexican man. So that was my challenge, though. I was like, I got to write this and I got to make it sound believable where it doesn't sound like she's just being naggy or anything negative. And it's myself because the character is basically me about how you reach a certain point that you start seeing people moving on like getting married, having kids, forming themselves. And you reach a point when you start going, what is wrong with me? Maybe that's just me. But
I see it now, to be fair.
Yeah.
So I think that's my favorite one, just because it touches a lot on expectations and how certain movies kind of tell you this is how it's going to be. And then when you get there, it's like, this is not at all how it is. And plus there's like a bunch of Easter eggs and I can play with the soundtrack a lot. And I think that's my favorite. And that's the one I would love to make into a movie.
Cool. Can you talk us through, before we jump into the big one, I have got another one I want to jump in, just because you mentioned it twice now, is you mentioned that, and arguably this is a smart move, that you wanted to write your first film in English. What's your firstborn language?
Spanish.
So how difficult was that transition to kind of go, all right, I'm not just going to learn English, but I'm going to learn naturally organic English that will be good enough to serve English markets? That's quite a big step to kind of like jump in and have in your head, because I mean, again, arguably there's a lot of sort of Spanish speaking countries out there as well that you could have written and appealed for. But talk us a little bit through about that sort of thought process and how that worked.
Well, I think it's the most challenging thing was how to convey the sense of humor, the Mexican sense of humor in America, without trying to just fixate on one sort of market, which I found funny because, speaking to you guys, I one of my best friends in film school was from Bristol.
Okay.
And I found out that Mexicans and people from Monterrey, where I'm from, and people from Bristol have almost the same sense of humor. So, completely bonded by Interpol, by the band Interpol and Joy Division. Like, that was instant.
Yeah.
Like, just like, he was listening to songs and he was like, that's a tune, man. And I'm like, oh, well, check this out. And then we just got along really well. But it was really difficult to kind of like make people laugh in Canada. That was really tough.
Really,
like, people
weird.
Just joking or not joking.
Or is that because they've got like a deadpan, sort of a dry sort of sense of humor? Yeah.
Yeah, they're pretty awkward.
Yeah.
But you start understanding and then you move around.
Yeah. There's a lot of that in England. I like it when I don't know if someone's joking or not. And the problem is when you when you do those sort of jokes and you know that like someone might not understand that you're joking, and you know it's like hurting the feelings a bit, so you have to kind of
I do that to my girlfriend all the time. She's like, what? I'm like, I'm fucking kidding, come on.
Yeah.
We've been together for 4 years, get with it. But that was it's tough, especially with the spelling. I never get offended when someone corrects me on like how do I pronounce a word or like the dictation or what, or you know, whatever. I want to learn. I want to get better. So I watch all my movies with closed caption.
Okay. Yeah.
That way I can hear like, oh, that's how you pronounce this. Oh, that's how you spell this with S instead of C, which is like the kind of thing that goes on with Spanish. With Spanish, like in English, it's T-I-O-N, like constitution. And then in Spanish, it's the C-I-O-N. So it kind of flips in your head.
Yeah.
But usually when I write, I'm like, coming up with ideas in Spanish and then just throwing them in English.
Yeah.
Well,
challenge.
So in terms of the humor, I mean, so I've seen Monday, your feature film, and I know there's a couple of bits in that I was like laughing, like howling with laughter at. So the humor is coming across, obviously.
Well, good.
So, yeah.
Because our whole career is done.
So, so first of all, like, congratulations. You did this big project. Rebel Without a Crew. Can you quickly tell us a little bit about the project, what it was, the TV show that you did, what it came from, the book it came from, that kind of thing? Can you just give us a brief overview?
Yeah, of course. So one of the first Hispanic filmmakers in the independent realm is Robert Rodriguez, and how he created or started his career was making a $7,000 movie that he shot by himself back in 1992 called El Mariachi, which was screened at Sundance. And I think it still holds the record as the most successful independent film of all time, because it's shot for $7,000, then it sold for $1 million, like something ridiculous.
Yeah. Wow.
Ridiculous. And he wrote a book about kind of like the creation of that movie called Rebel Without a Crew. So He has a TV station or a TV channel. I don't know. I don't want to insult anyone how I say it. It's a channel on TV called El Rey Network. And it basically, it airs a lot of original programming and like action movies. It's super cool. Like if you like Planet Terror, Tarantino, Kung Fu, action, that's your channel. And they were they posted like, hey, we're going to do this show called Rebel Without a Crew. People should submit. So it was a long process because first it's like, congratulations, you're top 50, then 25, 20, 15, 10, 7, 5. And it was the whole process where you have to submit work, you have to do interviews, you have to do pitches, you have to do, show us a short film, show us your body of work. We did a bunch of exams with doctors, like, they don't want us to, like, shit hits the fan, and then out of nowhere you get a gun, like, all right, you motherfucker. Like, none of that. They want to know how well you can handle the stress, because it was, I don't know what people's perspective is on reality TV, guys, but... Yeah. They did not fucking help us in any way. Nothing was staged. Nothing was staged unless they're like, can you guys come in through the door again? That's it.
Yeah.
They did not like say $7,000 and then like, hey guys, you guys are getting $30,000.
Yeah.
No, we didn't. The fear, like, how will they manipulate what we say and would they make us look bad? But that was never Robert's intention. Like, he doesn't want to push anyone down. He wants to inspire filmmakers. That's the whole goal. That's why there's no contest. There's no clear winner. I think we're all the winners because we all got to do our feature film. We got to talk to one of our idols and we screened at one of the biggest film festivals of all time. So that's the prize. And that was experience to getting in.
So Rebel Without a Crew, the TV show, is currently, if you're in England, you should definitely watch it because it's incredibly inspiring to me to watch Alejandro and these four filmmakers do this project.
Thanks.
So where can you watch it? It's rebelwithoutacrew.tumblr.com, I think.
Yeah, for anyone not in the US, it's on Tumblr. You can watch it on Tumblr every Monday. I think Monday or Tuesday, the new episode comes up.
Yeah.
But if you're in the United States, it's on Go90, which is a free app. So anyone can just watch it for free. So it's just where you live, you can go to Go90 or Tumblr.
Yeah, and we're currently on, like, I think it's episode 4 or 5 where they started the filming now. So we've seen you go through the pre-production. We've seen you choose locations, cast in like 2 hours. It's a lot of fun. And by the way, if you were ever worried about how you came across, you are coming across really well. Like, you just come across as like people, friends making films and having fun with it. It's really nice to see.
It was definitely fun, but it was definitely stressful.
Yeah.
Because like, the binder for the location, I was just like, everything was too nice. Yeah. And then when they're like, by the way, we're doing locations, here's a binder. I'm like, I fucking knew it. Yeah. Like, that makes sense. But it was really cool that the other filmmakers and I got along really well because we could have been fighting through the locations, but, you know, we just, all right, it's not a contest. Here's the houses, here's this, let's all spread out. I think they gave us 15 minutes.
Yeah,
wow.
So just going and looking through them. It's really weird because I think that at the beginning I was really scared of having cameras on you for the whole time, and it definitely takes a toll on you after filming and you trying to do the movie and then having cameras there. But I think after a couple of days, you just forget.
Worries me because I'd be like picking my nose or scratching my ass or something.
I did that many times, sir.
And you hope they cut those out.
When you see me drawing, actually.
Yeah.
How much actual FaceTime did you get then with Robert? And if you could pick sort of your top three either moments or takeaways from obviously working with someone so experienced and so big in the business, what would they be?
I think on episode 1 when he walked out.
Did you fangirl?
I think they don't cut it, but all people were talking and I was the first one to see him and I just went, that's all I did. I just looked at him. It's super stupid. Just seeing him as fanboyish as I want to say, because like I was telling him, like I would wash my dad's car to fucking watch his movies. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, to then the journey that has, you know, taken fucking 36 years to then officially shake his hand is kind of mind blowing, you know? But I mean, that instance was great. We met him several times. Like, we had that 20-minute meeting. He stopped by our set. He stopped by our set without planning, because we were shooting at his studios or at his warehouse.
My nose.
Hey, Robert, what? And he's just a film buff, man. Like, after a couple of minutes of the whole mysticism, like, this is Robert Rodriguez, he's just the guy who loves film. He's super calm. He knows what he needs to do to get the job done. Like, he works out. He does a lot of research, because he knows that he eats well, because he knows he shoots a lot of hours and he stays up a lot of nights. So he takes care of himself because he wants to put more effort into the film world and doing several jobs, etc. So, yeah, he's just a really cool guy, and he's super knowledgeable. And as soon as you start talking to him about movies, he starts geeking out.
Yeah.
He's just like, yeah, remember when this scene, like, he, you know, it's not like, I'm Robert, fuck all of you. That's not him. That's definitely not him. And I think at the premiere of the movie, he turned around and he actually said thank you to me. And I was just like, what?
That's rare.
Really enjoyed the gunshots in the movie. Like, he was like, how the fuck did you do that? Because this is the first time I do action. I've never done action.
Yeah.
So that was like, that was another one of my challenges. Like, let me see if I can do action. And I don't know, man. Like, just having him visit our set when it wasn't planned was great. Just having him walk, like, what are you guys doing? I see some lights. And he just started chatting. Like, it's great. Like, I guess every time.
That sounds good. So the film you made as part of this TV show is an action comedy called Monday. Like I said, it's hilarious. It's can you tell us a little bit about it? Obviously, you've finished the project now. If you go back to watch the TV show, you'll see you maybe, you know, you going through the process of it. But we know it's done. So how are you happy with it?
I am really happy with it. I will never do this again. Just because I had to operate the camera. I had to direct it. I had to help produce. It was everything. And the movie, I'm happy with the movie. I'm really proud of the result and the actors, especially the actors, because we could only shoot for 9-hour days. So once we were getting there's not really a lot of time to prep. It's like, this is the scene. We're going to go like this. The camera will be here. The camera will be there. This is your motivation. Let's run it once. Let's run it twice. We got to go. So having the actors basically erase everything that they're used to like, if this is the amount of time the actors get to prep, cut it in half. And it's kind of like, people don't understand how important actors are. They're the face of your fucking movie. I don't care how production value and great it is, if the acting doesn't convince you, your whole movie's wrong. So having them adapt to everything that we had to go through, I'm incredibly grateful. Like, we had to speed up everything, and there were times where it's just like, we only get 3 takes, we gotta go, especially because the movie moves around a lot.
Yeah,
it goes go. It's not like just, okay, let's just have a steady shot and have him come in, go. No, it's like that, push and tilt, pan. I mean, there's so I'm really happy with the results, and I think that the critique that I would have is my camera operating, because we didn't have a monitor. We didn't have a follow focus. We just had to
have a good full focus. Gorilla.
Yeah. So there's some shots that are out of focus, my man. I couldn't do anything about it.
So
yeah, really happy.
Alejandro, so what would you tell the person who is making a film They're on the set. They're overwhelmed. You know, they're tired. They've got tears in their eyes, and they just at that point they're like, "I don't want to do this anymore. This is fucking shit." What advice would you tell that person?
There's like a million other people that want to be in your shoes, yeah. So you should be grateful because you're doing it.
Yeah, really nice shoes.
If you like, if you really like film, if it's the one thing that consumes you, it's like, yeah, there's gonna be stressful moments, but it's like, just look at it. You'll get it done, and then the next day you'll be like, oh, I was stressing a lot about that.
Yeah.
You know, it's just have fun, man. It's like it's like telling someone that wants to play tennis, oh, training is hard. It's like, yeah, it's hard, but then if not, everyone will be doing it. Just have fun with it. It's something, it's beautiful. I love it.
And if you could pick one, what would be your favorite part of the process?
I think I don't really let go until the screening. Hmm. I'm really nervous during the screening, but seeing people laugh is like, I almost cried at the premiere. Or like on the last day of shooting, it doesn't really answer your question because it's everything, man. It's so, I love being on set. I love it. It's just different stages. When you're writing, it's the excitement of writing this idea. And then you see shit in your head. And you try to describe it. But then I talk a lot with sound effects, which everyone gives me shit about.
What do you mean?
So I'm like, okay, this is whatever he's saying. But then when you're filming, it's seeing all of this happen just opens another little chest. Hmm. Treasure chest. And then when you go to editing and you start seeing it with the music, that's another one. And then at the premiere, just having people respond is just like, that's awesome.
Congratulations, man. I think it's an amazing thing to have done, so you know, pat yourself on the back.
Thank you.
So did you like have a big blowout after? Did you get drunk and all that? What did you do?
Yes.
I'm a drinker, sir. Yeah. Like on episode 5, Josh and I were a little tipsy already. Like we were just like, you want to drink some beers? Okay. Because, you know, you have to do the stuff for the show, like the photo shoots, and then you have to do the prep for your movie. So it does become stressful. Mm. And not to mention that you can't really work on the weekends. That was one of the rules. You can't really work on Sunday. Because they kind of like take you to a hotel and it's like, you need to relax.
Okay.
They understand how work. Yeah, exactly. No, they would let us invite people on Saturdays. So there'll be, hopefully on the show, there will be some times where you'll see Alejandro cut loose a little bit. I know that after 3 weeks, all I did was give the finger to the camera.
Yeah.
Like Alejandro, like, fuck you. I don't want to talk. it took me a while to kind of like adjust back to reality. And like, I was like touching my chest to see if I was mic'd.
Yeah.
And Anna, the hit woman, was the first one to pick that up on the rap party. She's like, you're not mic'd, dude. I'm like, fuck. I'm touching my chest like I'm mic'd. Yeah. It was a couple of days to get used to, but you know, you miss it. You know, I, every time you finish a project, you miss it. You miss being there and like all the excitement of doing it. And then it's like back to reality.
Mm. Yeah. You talk a lot as well about part of it, obviously, at its core is the fact that Robert is one of the pioneers of independent filmmaking. And obviously in the last 20, 25 years, there's been a lot of sort of strides in a lot of different industries with the independent movement. How do you feel you see the next sort of 5-10 years in terms of independent filmmakers? And I know there's a lot of people at the minute that are almost like targeting Hollywood and kind of, without being too dramatic, make the whole system crumble because they're not kind of happy with that system there. But how do you see, from your perspective, the next sort of 5-10 years for independent film?
I think with the technology, the way it's growing, I think it's going to give a lot of opportunities for independent filmmakers. If what they want to do is not go from your first movie to do Jurassic Park. Mm. I mean, I know a couple of people get lucky or not get lucky, but they prove, but then they give the shot. Fantastic. I feel that it's gonna, there's just gonna be more stages you have to go through. Like, I'm not expecting now, like, yeah, here's $1 million. Fucking no one's fucking knocking on my door. But, like, how about instead of $7,000, how about we do 50 and then 100 and then we go on and go on. So I think that it's definitely a way for people that are going to the movie that don't want to see a remake, or they don't want to see a big comic book movie or something. They'd be like, oh, well, let's channel the independent scene and see what these guys are doing. Because with like online platforms, it's more accessible. You know what I mean? You could access shows and concerts or whatever from around the world. So it gives people the ability to access more content easy. So I think it'll be just more possibility for more people to express themselves in film or whatever way they want.
Cool. Well, that kind of leads into so this is the Massive Storytelling Podcast. We don't just ask the little questions, we also ask the massive questions. Say again.
Did I answer the question?
Dan, did he answer your question?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I was like,
the massive question for today is, should I become a filmmaker? And you might have touched on this before, but if anyone out there is like younger, like Dan's age, 27 or something, you're like thinking, I kind of want to do it, but I'm not too sure. Should I do it? It's a lot of work. Should I not just get a day job and like become a killer salesman or whatever? So what do you reckon? Should someone become a filmmaker?
If you turn 60 and you're not going to regret it not doing it, I'll do it. If you can't live without it, and you, like, as dramatic as it sounds, guys, like, I've talked to this to my girlfriend or to my friends. I was like, if I don't do movies or I'm not a filmmaker that actually makes a living doing this, I failed in life. I don't care about having kids. I don't care about anything else. Like, if I don't make films, I failed. It's as simple as that. Like, it's very tragic, or it's very intense, or however.
Yeah.
But it's like, what's the point of living if you're not going to take risks? What's the point of anything? You know, like, oh, you know what? I shouldn't go tell this girl that I like her. What? Why not? She's just going to say no. And you're going to hear no a lot. People don't believe that you can do it. People don't think that you have what it takes. Whatever. But if you love it, they're not going to stop you. Like, you know how many people laughed at me when I was in Mexico saying, I'm one day going to write movies in America. Yeah. I would have classrooms laugh at me. Fuck them. Yeah. I'm here now.
Fuck them. Middle finger.
Quotation of the episode.
What you love, whatever branch it is. If you want to become a doctor, if you want to become an architect, you want to become a musician, and there's nothing else you want to do, do it.
I do see a lot of my own friends, without obviously naming names, who do kind of suffer from the fall at the first post syndrome, where it is a lot of, oh, this is what I want to do, and then they'll kind of try it for a year, there'll be a knockback, and that'll be kind of like, I can't do this anymore. I do think it takes, I don't know if it's a certain person or a certain mindset or circumstances that helps build that resilience and kind of get to the level that, I mean, I'd say that my goal in life is to write books and make a living off of writing books. But I wouldn't say that I'm maybe as sort of married to the idea as you are with film. I wouldn't, like, for me, because I've kind of been up and down for a few different kind of career paths. I feel like I've got a little bit more of a leniency to just kind of divert in different directions, as long as I'm doing something that I'm happy with at heart. Mm. But I mean, to be honest, with things like YouTube and everything nowadays, like the quality of phone cameras and everything is really no excuse for, say, the 11, 12, 13-year-old who wants to film to kind of not turn around, get their camera, pull it out, and just start making stuff. I mean, everything's so accessible now. There's not really a reason not to.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because you want to portray something, because you have something to say. Don't do it because you want to be famous. Because if that's the case, then you're going to suffer in film.
Yeah.
It's not going
to... There's easier ways to be famous nowadays as well. Yeah.
Exactly.
And Luke, isn't Keith pretty much just 5 minutes of screen grabbing software and some story?
Yeah. So I haven't sent you my short film, Alejandro, but I made a short film just using, because I wanted to make a film. I made a short film just using screen capturing software because I didn't have any money. I'll send you a link so you can watch it. But that was the same thing. I wanted to make a film, and
exactly.
Why not? The technology's there.
1 week, no money, go.
Yeah.
Exactly. Send it over. It's like, when you have, please send it over. But when you have something that you want to say. Like on my YouTube page, if you go to The Princess and the Musician, it's a short film I did, which I acted in a dramatic mind you. It was because I was incredibly heartbroken with one girl that I thought was going to be the love of my life, and it just didn't happen. So in my sense, what I did was I wrote this story, so I can't see her. Like I let bygones be bygones. We don't see each other, which is sad because she was like my best friend. But my way of telling her I'm sorry was making this movie. I get why you left me. I understand that I was selfish. So I had to say something, and that was my way of saying it. So
is that the way that you communicate the easiest is through movies then, right? That's the reason you talk in sound effects and stuff, because you're communicating in a movie way.
Sometimes, yeah. I like to talk, and I like to hear people. Like, I love to go to like a bar and just have a drink and just chat. I love it. That's how you understand personalities or break down characters or stuff. It's like every human being's a character and it's intriguing. I love it. So when there's something that I want to say more out loud, I think that's when I do movies. Like a short film that I don't have on my YouTube because we have copyrighted music is called Leslie. And it's about a female singer-songwriter who reaches a point where she's like, fuck this. I'm broke. I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to give up on singing. So it's kind of like my way of saying I'm not getting anything. Because, you know, like you were saying, you have friends that try for a year or whatever. There's been times I pink slipped my car so I can get financing for the movie. I've eaten out of canned food and tap water because I need money to do the movie. It's how much you really want it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if you just want to give it, let's just give it 6 months. Okay, good luck. But it's going to happen in 6 months. Hey, if it does, great. Good for you. But it's like saying like for you for writing. Did you just give writing 6 months?
No.
It's because you really like it.
Seven.
Yeah. I mean, we've spoken a little bit about this on the podcast. Sort of even just the books that me and Luke have written together, we both kind of said that even if the first books we'd written together had made no money, we'd still be writing it because at the end of the day, a lot of it is for me anyway, and I don't want to speak on your behalf, Luke, but I'd say for you as well, like half of it's a process and half of it is just the telling of the story and the possibility that at some point someone at the other end of that might appreciate those words and digest it. And it's when you get the reviewer feedback or you just hear from people on Facebook, on email and that, those sort of the first, I'll always remember the first feeling that I got when that first review came through and just going, okay, that's enough to kind of keep you going because it's like someone's heard you.
Yeah.
It's so heartwarming when someone has something good to say. Obviously, when they trash it, it sucks, but you know, you're not going to please everyone. It's just not going to happen. So yeah, man, it's something so intriguing when you get people to be like, your movie this or your movie that. Like, it's just, it feels amazing. Mm-hmm. And you know, your art helped me through this. Like, 500 Days of Summer got me through that fucking breakup because I was just like, I hated life. Like, you would have seen a very different Alejandro. I was depressed. I was sad. I was just, you know, like I would drink myself to sleep because I could see her laying down next to me. But then you start realizing shit and you know, time is your friend. And then you meet someone, my girlfriend and I get along really well. And I'm actually really happy I had my heart broken because now I learn how to appreciate her and not make the same mistakes. So it's all just life, man. Life is, you know, it's just a little. I think movies help people deal with stuff or writing or painting or whatever.
Yeah. Sounds good, man. That's a good answer.
Well, it got real serious, right?
Yeah.
Love it.
Okay. It's time for the quick fire round. We've got 10 questions for you and you've got like, what, 5 seconds per answer at the most?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Are you
quick,
ready?
Quick.
Let's do it.
Dan, do you want to go first?
And if I can't answer them, I'll just disconnect and be like, oh, the internet.
We'll just put in a robot answering for you.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, question number one. Netflix or Amazon Prime?
Netflix.
Favorite director?
Sorry?
Favorite director?
Spielberg.
What's your favorite sandwich?
Oh, that's a tough one. I'm just going to go with grilled cheese.
Favorite.
I mean, I'm so boring.
Favorite book on creativity?
Rebel Without a Crew.
What was the first film you ever watched and begged for the last 2 hours of your life back?
Oh, the new Tomb Raider.
Ooh.
The one person you'd want to meet?
Tarantino.
How fast can you tie your shoelaces?
5 seconds.
Best birthday present that you ever received?
My dad got me a Batman from 1989 action figure. That was the best.
Wow. What film makes you cry?
Several. Forrest Gump, Jerry Maguire, Cinema Paradiso, the ending of Shawshank Redemption. 500 Days of Summer. Yeah, no, I cried.
Number 10, and the last question. Where can we follow you and your work?
YouTube, Alejandro Montoya Marin. And same thing, only no spaces, on Instagram, Alejandro Montoya Marin.
Well, thanks so much for coming on the show, dude. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Hey, likewise, guys. That was a lot of fun. And hopefully it's not the last time. I really like chatting with you guys. And if we do get into rain dance, I would love to get a beer with you guys.
Yeah, definitely, man. Yeah. It'd be nice to see you in person. Yeah. Sorry, just a quick thanks to Disaster Piece for the intro and outro music, Acast for hosting the podcast, the listeners for listening, our Patreons over at patreon.com/... the new website, www.massivestorytelling.com. Thanks once more to our guest, Alejandro. Thanks again. And thanks to Dan, my co-host, for being here, because without you, I'd be alone. Cheers, Dan.
Thank you. And thank you, Alejandro.
Thank you, guys.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 6 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $2.99 each. Then get flavorful large avocados for 99 cents each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.